Welcome to the Madison County Milk House. We come to you from Madison County, New York. I'm kind of excited because this is our second episode. I'm Samantha Field, the Public Information Officer for Madison County, and with me is...
I'm Ryan Coe, the Deputy PIO.
It's hard to stumble over that, you know, because your actual title is very, very difficult to say. So I'm excited because we have a lot coming up on this show. The first one did better than I thought. More people listened to it, so we're excited about that. And we have a really exciting show for you. So I guess we should get this started.
Yeah, let's go.
So it's that time again here on the Madison County Milk House where we're doing the time capsule with Madison County historian Matt Ertz. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
We survived to episode two. Can you believe it? So it is February. We honor the triumphs and struggles of African Americans throughout U.S. history with Black History Month. And I think a lot of people don't know the history we have here in Madison County, especially with the abolition movement. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Madison County played an instrumental role. We obviously had one of the most famous abolitionists, Gerrit Smith, who lived in the hamlet of Peterborough. And we had one of the seminal events in New York history when, in October of 1835, a number of individuals met in Utica to form the first New York State Anti-Slavery Society. And they were injected by a crowd. There was actually a riot, and they forced them to leave. And Gerrit Smith was at that event and saw what was happening and invited everybody back to Peterborough, where they came. They came by canal. They came by carriage. And a lot of them walked all the way from Utica to Peterborough. Some 400 people came and had the second day of the first New York State Anti-Slavery Society meeting in the Presbyterian Church in Peterborough. Today, you might know that as the Smithfield Community Center. And that's where the first New York State Anti-Slavery Society was formed. And that's actually what kind of galvanized Gerrit Smith. Up till that point, he had been someone who believed in colonization, which was taking African-American slaves and sending them back to Africa. At this moment, though, he saw what happened. It changed him, and he became a full-fledged abolitionist.
It's kind of fascinating that it's kind of right here in Madison County. This isn't where you would sit here and think, wow, it was kind of really, the movement really got started right here.
And then Gerrit Smith, didn't he team up with like a well-known abolitionist and something happened too with that?
Yeah, so there's a few things. Gerrit Smith was an incredibly wealthy man. His father had a land business that he took over and was able to bring in people. He helped pay for Frederick Douglass's newspaper out of Rochester. He was friends with John Brown and helped fund John Brown's adventures in Kansas and later the raid on Harper's Ferry. A number of prominent abolitionists from Massachusetts came here. Probably one of the more harrowing stories is the story which Gerrit Smith was involved with, Harriet Powell. Harriet Powell was an enslaved woman who came from Mississippi to Syracuse, and some arrangements were made, and she was taken and hid for a little while in Marcellus and DeWitt, and eventually ended up at the home of a doctor in Lebanon, Dr. John Clark, and he spent about 2 weeks there, and then ended up with Gerrit Smith for just a couple of days. And while she was there, she met Elizabeth Cady Stanton and had a conversation with Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton said that impacted her life. And then Harriet made it to Canada. Gerrit Smith owned a good portion of the port of Oswego and was able to help make arrangements to send people from Peterborough to there, and then they would have ships take them across to Canada where they were free. So it was a really big moment, and Gerrit Smith was known to help folks along their way. You know, Madison County did have a number of stops that we're fairly certain that were on the Underground Railroad, Gerrit Smith probably being the most well-known. So we have this really unique history that we like to promote and talk about, you know, how important it is that we were one of the leaders of that movement.
I just always find it fascinating that we have such a rich history, especially with the abolition movement, the Underground Railroad. And if you go to Peterborough, you can learn all about that. But also, if you go to Peterborough, don't blink. You missed Peterborough.
You're just as likely to see an Amish carriage ride through as you are to see a car. So it's a very small hamlet, but it is home to the Smithfield Community Center, which is on the National Register of Historic Places. It's also home to the Gerrit Smith Estate National Historic Landmark, which houses the former laundry, which Gerrit Smith purchased the freedom of a woman who came up to Peterborough and worked and operated his laundry for a long time. I believe that was Harriet Russell, was that woman's name. And then you can see the barn, and the barn is a unique perspective. It's just a standard horse barn, but it was a place where we know that escaped enslaved individuals were held kind of hidden for a period until they were sent to their freedom. And if you ever get a chance to do a tour, they do them for big events up there. I know, Sam, you've taken part in one.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. Like, you go into the barn, you're like, oh, this is just a horse barn. And I don't know, you just have like this feeling come over you, or like if the walls could talk.
And the horse stalls aren't typically visible to the public. The floor isn't in the greatest shape, but they'll open the door sometimes so you can see, and that's a place where they hid. And for a lot of people, that's just a very powerful moment to know the history of that building and how important it was and how hard that local community has worked to preserve it.
It really is. It's a very powerful moment. I kind of want to fast forward a little bit from the 1800s when it comes to Black History Month. And you just sat down with Alda Mack Smith. People may know him as the former mayor of Oneida. He actually happened to be the first ever African-American mayor of the city of Oneida. And you just sat down with him and did an interview. Let's listen to a quick clip about him talking about becoming mayor.
Sure.
It's kind of startling because, to be honest with you, most of the conversations, I guess, or even the things I hear about that are said and done, or the issues that swirl around blackness, just have never been part of my experience here. It never comes up. It's never been an issue. It's kind of startling, really. I mean, people will ask me questions, and I'll think, what am I supposed to make of that? I never mentioned it. I didn't run as the first African-American mayor. I ran as Max from Oneida. I think people voted because it's Max, and I know him from here.
So, Matt, you have this opportunity where you get to sit down with people and document history for all of us. How was it to interview Max? And what was there anything fascinating you found out?
Yeah, so I've had the wonderful opportunity to sit on a couple of boards with Max and work on some historical events. So going into it, he and I knew each other pretty well. But Max is such a unique character in that he has spent most of his life in the city of Oneida. He grew up here. He talked about what it was like to grow up as a child with, you know, he even kind of nodded off the number of African-American families that were here that he knew. He talked about, you know, what it was like. He eventually goes to school in Utica and some other places. But what was really interesting was talking about his time as a political official and how important it was for him to be active in his community and take pride in his community. And he served as a councilman for the city of Oneida, the deputy mayor. He talked about those experiences, how he got those roles. And he actually was also the first African-American supervisor for Madison County. For a very brief period, he was appointed for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. So he's been someone who stepped into roles that no one else has stepped in before. And he talked about that and those experiences. And we also talked about how important Madison County's history is, because it's very important to him. He's obviously very involved up in Peterborough. He's a descendant of some of the folks that were there. So it's a great 1 hour conversation. And he touches on just about everything in his life and how Madison County and Central New York and Oneida have impacted it.
And if you want to check that out, we'll have a link to it here in the show notes for this podcast, also up on our YouTube page and on your Facebook page.
Yeah, we're going to put a short little snippet up for our Black History Month posts, and then the whole interview is available on the YouTube page.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Until next month.
Yes. Women's History Month, here we come.
I'm excited about that one.
Yeah, we got some good ones.
We do. We will see you then. Thank you.
All right, now we're here with Tisha Cook, who is the Director of Community Mental Health Services in the Mental Health Department. How are you doing, Tisha?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So why don't you tell us a little about yourself? How long have you been with Madison County, and what's your role?
I have worked for Madison County for 15 years. I was an intern here in grad school, and then I worked someplace else for about 10 years, came back, and I was a social worker and then kind of worked my way up. And now I have oversight of our county mental health clinic and some other programs that we can get into in a little bit if you want to talk about it. And also I have oversight over how people in the community are accessing services, and making sure that people with behavioral health needs are able to participate in programs that they need to. So I kind of have a dual role.
When you think Madison County government, you might not think mental health services. So let's talk about those for a little bit. Like, what is the mental health clinic? What kind of services do you guys provide?
Sure. So we have an outpatient mental health clinic, and we see all ages. So we have some clients as young as 3, all the way up to, I think we have someone in their 90s that comes. And we have about 2,000 clients who come see us. And so they come to our clinic for a range of reasons. Excuse me. It could be they're depressed, they're anxious. We have people with schizophrenia, just really the whole spectrum of reasons why people might need mental health services. We also have satellite clinics. So we have a satellite mental health clinic at our DSS building. And then we have satellite clinics in 3 school districts in the county. So that is new this year. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit more. We also have a jail mental health program and a peer program.
So you have a lot under your umbrella.
Yes, I sure do.
So when you think mental health, a lot of people might go to the, oh, it's just somebody who, you know, maybe has schizophrenia or is in crisis and using drugs. There has always been a lot of stigma with mental health. But do you feel that kind of that message is changing a little bit now in the past couple of years?
I do. I feel like when I first started here 15 years ago, the population was people without insurance, severely mentally ill. Pretty much that's all. We had some kids that came to us, but not a large child population. And it was kind of a very specific population. And then over time, we've really expanded our reach. And then what I think you're referring to is, you know, during COVID, everyone's lives blew up and everyone really struggled. And I say everyone, meaning me, you guys, you know, we all did. And so what we have found over the last several years is really our population is everyone. It's college students. It's stay-at-home moms. It's, you know, dads who are struggling. It's people with private insurance. It is the kind of people with Medicaid or people that are seriously mentally ill. So it has been nice to really expand our reach and who we're serving.
And how has the clinic and your services adapted to that change?
So prior to 2020, we did 0 telehealth services. Everything was in the office. Everything was in person. And March of 2020 hit, and we had to, within basically like a week, stand up our telehealth program. And thankfully, we have a great vendor who worked with us for our electronic medical record. And so since then, we've been providing telehealth services along with the in-person. So at this stage, it's basically about half is in-person, and then it's kind of evenly split between phone and video for the remaining half. And what we have found is it's very convenient and has really allowed us to keep people engaged who normally would have dropped off or stopped seeing us, to be able to have that telehealth service. It's very helpful.
So when it comes to all these things you have going on, when it comes to you personally, like, what's the thing that you find, you know, the most special to you, and the thing that's most engaging to you that you really enjoy the most or feel the most passionate about?
I really feel strongly that we provide a very valuable service for the community. And when I became the director 10 years ago, it's no secret around Madison County that people wanted to close the clinic. The board at that time wanted to close all of our services. And I felt really strongly that I think people just didn't understand what we did. And so I did a lot of education with everyone. And here we are, you know, 10 years later of me being the director, and we've expanded so much. So I'm really proud of that. I feel like that I can leave here whenever I leave and feel successful at keeping that and expanding the services. And as I mentioned, being in the schools this year, I'm very proud of that too, because that was a big project and we got that off the ground.
Let's talk about that.
Sure. We did a needs assessment, and it took us about maybe like 6 months start to finish. We surveyed the community, really anyone that would give us feedback, we wanted feedback from. And we spent a lot of time with the school districts talking about their need, because I knew that that was going to be something that was going to be identified as a need, the mental health needs of kids. Kids have struggled the last few years. And we haven't had, there's not any clinics in the county in schools. So we spent more time with the schools where we talked to them. And what ended up happening, that process was probably a little bit longer, but we wanted to really understand what was going on. There were three districts who identified wanting school satellite clinics. So Cazenovia, Chittenango, and Hamilton said that they wanted to partner with us. And the funding for the first couple of years is provided from the district and the county. So it is a true partnership. The salary for the positions is paid for by both partners. There are employees. So we are calling it a pilot program because we don't have anything to compare it to. We've never billed in schools. We don't know what a caseload looks like. We have guesses, but we really had to get in there and see what it was like. And so we've had, pretty much since October, we've been fully staffed. And the beginning few months were just kind of processes and procedures. Right. But it has really taken off. And we even have people calling the clinic now to say, hey, my kid's in this district. Do you have a satellite there? Or my kid goes to Chittenango. Can your person see them? Which we really love because that we want it to be very convenient for everyone. We also are partnering with the Rural Health Network to do mental health first aid trainings.
Oh, those are great.
Yep. So that started the school year too. That kind of was related to the school project. And so actually, I think they've gone to all but two school districts in the county, and they've trained a significant number of teachers and students in mental health first aid. So that's been a great project too.
For the mental health first aid, I mean, mm-hmm. is that for anybody can go to that, or is it just, you know, the students and the teachers if you go to school?
So there's all different kinds, and if people are interested, Madison County Rural Health Council has a website, and so they have various versions. So they have one for EMS, they have one for, I think, children, adolescents, and then they have one just a general mental health first aid. So some they're offering via Zoom, so people in the community can just Zoom in and do it that way.
I just wanted to touch on one other thing. You know, if people, you know, are listening to this and they know somebody or they themselves may need, you know, just somebody to talk to, how do they get in touch with you?
So they can call our main number, 315-366-2327, or they can just walk in. We don't ask people to call first and make an appointment, so they can kind of come in when it's convenient for them. Generally, we try to stick to 8 to 3 Monday through Thursday, but if someone shows up on a Friday, we don't turn them away. And that is kind of how we handle it during the business hours. We also have a full-time crisis person, so when you call that main number, it'll say if you're in crisis, press 1. You'll go right to Marcy, who is our full-time crisis worker. After hours, our calls go to Contact Crisis Services, which is also the 988 provider. I don't mm-hmm. know if we want to just mention.
Yes.
988 is a new project. It's a federal project, and kind of like 911, people know what that is, why you call that. 988 is the mental health counterpart. So the goal is if people are in crisis and need to talk to someone, they can call or text that number and get support immediately. So in our area, Contact is the 988 provider. So after 4:30, the calls roll over to them. You'll get a licensed provider on the phone, and you can talk to them too, and they'll follow up with us as needed. Or also, they can dispatch mobile crisis and send someone right to your house.
It's nice to know that no matter what time of day, there's actually a local person, if you will, there to answer the phone for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, thank you, Tisha. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So February, we talked about how it's Black History Month, but it's also Library Lovers Month. So joining us here on the Madison County Milk House is Liz Metzger, the director of the Canastota Public Library. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, thank you.
I'm excited to talk about this because the idea around the podcast was always just to, you know, talk about hot topics that are going on in the county and also the services that are here in the county for people to know where they can go for, you know, either mental health or, you know, if they want to plan a birthday party at a park, wherever they need, whatever they need. But libraries provide so much to our community. And I guess first I wanted to know, can you How many libraries here are here in Madison County?
Well, there are 10. Cazenovia, Canastota, Oneida, Morrisville, DeRider, Hamilton, Bridgeport, Chittenango, New Woodstock, and Earlville.
I'm so glad you know that, not me. I've got my hands going.
And each of them are wonderful and unique in their own ways. You may not know this, but New Woodstock's building is a former church. The Hamilton Public Library has electric car chargers. The Chittenango Library is in a former bank building, so there's vaults in there still that they've incorporated into their Yellow Brick Road theme.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is awesome. Oneida has a brand new library, which is, you know, spacious and all new, which me being in a very old library but a historic Carnegie building, I am a little jealous of the new things they have in the Oneida Library.
Oneida Library has a lot of upgrades. Yes. And you walk in, you're like, wait, where am I?
Right.
And I hear there's a mummy somewhere.
In the Cazenovia Public Library has a wonderful museum with a mummy that was donated by a Cazenovia resident from years and years ago. So that's an awesome place to visit. Yeah.
That's cool.
It is very cool. Another thing I'd like to mention is that the libraries in Madison County are all big supporters of Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. And if you've never heard of that, Dolly Parton graciously 20-some-odd years ago started giving away books to children in her own community, and this has grown to be a worldwide phenomenon. And we have 1,300 children in Madison County that are receiving books each month from Dolly Parton's foundation, and all of the libraries raise money to help support the purchase and mailing of those books.
The Field Twins, my two mm-hmm. almost four-year-olds, thank you so much for that program, because it's absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for bringing it up.
It's a fantastic program, and we're glad that we're all participating in that. But there's more that goes on in libraries from cradle to grave, you know, story times, monthly art exhibits, book clubs, writers groups, knitting groups. Either you can go to yoga classes in your library. We have senior citizen fitness classes in libraries. There are chess clubs. There are ukulele lessons. We have a seed library at our library where you can borrow seeds to plant vegetables and flowers, and even trees in the spring and summer. Craft programs, and every library also does a summer reading program to encourage kids to be involved in books and learning throughout the summer so that they don't lose any of their education during that summer slide. So all libraries are very engaged in educating their communities and entertaining their communities and keeping people having a nice, safe place to visit for meetings. We all provide groups meeting space. There's just a lot going on, and it's really important for folks to not only use their own library, library cards are free, but to visit their neighboring libraries and see what they've got to offer.
And I know last year you guys did a passport.
Yes.
To go to the different libraries.
Yes, it was very successful.
I know a lot of people who did that, mm-hmm. And it looks like so much fun.
Yeah. It was the Mid-York road trip, and there are 45 libraries in Madison, Oneida, and Herkimer County. And if you visited all of them, you got a gold library card, which is pretty
That's
cool.
That's nice.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Here's my gold card.
That's my gold card. That's right. But libraries often have special speakers and events. Last night, Matt Ertz was at our library to do a Black History Month program on the abolitionist movement in Madison County. And some things that I'd like to mention that are happening in the Madison County libraries, the Hamilton Public Library is doing a neat thing. They're partnering with an organization called Neighborhood Forest that provides young people with a free tree to plant.
Oh,
and
nice.
They need to have registrations for that completed by the end of the month. So if you're in the Hamilton area, check that out. There's a website that you can register for that. They're also doing something cute. Libraries are always trying to think of ways to encourage people to come in. So they have a little hedgehog that they're hiding in their library. And if you find him, you get a piece of candy. He hides in a new spot every day. So you have to keep going back to the Hamilton Library. And then at the end of the month, they're going to be giving away the hedgehog in a raffle, I believe. So that's kind of a cute thing to do.
That is great.
Yeah.
So is there like a misconception of libraries you think the overall population probably has of what they actually have to offer, that they, you know, that, and this kind of what you'd like them to know is just like there's all these different resources and Absolutely. Things available, right?
We still hear from people that think that, you know, they have to pay money for a library card. Many libraries in the area don't even charge overdue fees any longer. We just want the books returned so other people can borrow them, so there's no late fees. But there's all types of things. Oneida is doing a trivia night. Next week is vacation week, so they have some events planned for school vacation, a Pokemon Day, a Disney Day, a ukulele jamboree. And Matt Ertz is making the rounds in the libraries next month, which is Women's History Month. So he's going to be talking about women in World War II from Madison County at the DeRuyter Library on March 9th. And everybody, if they want to know how to know what the hours are for specific libraries, the best clearinghouse is to go to our library system website, which is midyork.org, and that will list all of the libraries. You can click on the library name. It'll take you to that library's website. You'll see all of the events that are happening there, what hours they're open, how to get a hold of them. Most libraries, if not all, have a Facebook presence as well, so that's often a great way to check things out.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add? Because I feel like I learned so much, and can we just leave and go check out the library and hang out all day?
Well, one more thing before we go is that many libraries have started getting passes to other organizations and places. So we're going to have 11 of them, you know, Fort Rickey Zoo, Corning Glass, the Munson Williams Proctor Museum, the Rosamond Gifford Zoo, all the New York State parks, those types of things, and they'll allow you free entrance or a reduced price entrance to many of those places.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
That's a wrap for us here on this episode of the Madison County Milk House. So we're going to close the gate, and we'll see you all in the Milk House next time around.